and welcome to ReachMahjong.com's podcast with you, as always, except not quite so always, except for now it will always be always again, Garth, and our other host.
Hello, it's Jen.
How's it going, Jen?
Good.
Did you have a good time in Malaysia?
Yeah, it was awesome.
What did you do while you were there?
Practically nothing.
That sounds like a good time.
Yes.
How could you have a much better time?
Yeah, it's just all food, lots and lots of food, massages, a great night of karaoke, a couple nights at a couple different bars, and sat by the pool, hung around the house, watched Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? Awesome. Jeff Foxworthy, yes.
Were you smarter than a fifth grader?
Absolutely not. I am really bad with American presidents.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
And do all fifth graders know American presidents?
They got a surprisingly number of them right. Like, who was the youngest president? Something about short terms or something. Like,
youngest president?
I can't even remember the
JFK.
Questions. No?
Wow. I do not. I thought I could at least be smarter than fifth grader on one question, and I missed that.
It could be that I have the question wrong. I'm not even smart enough to remember the fifth grade question. So.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, and the guy that was on there wasn't very smart either. And I also didn't know that the Statue of Liberty was on Liberty Island.
Liberty Island?
Yeah.
It's not on Ellis Island?
No.
Wow.
I guess Ellis Island is next to it. I don't know. Producer Troy, you've been to Ellis Island, right? Oh. I'm going to say our only person here who's been to New York, like, more than a day and a half. I have been to New York for a day and a half, but the people I was with, they were like, oh, we're not interested in the Statue of Liberty at all.
Well, I have to say, that's pretty disappointing to find out I'm 2 for 2 on being dumber than a five-year-old. Or, I mean, a fifth grader. Ouch. Speaking of being dumb, other random news to talk about, just in case we have anybody else who might be a guest on the show someday. Yoyogi Hachiman is not accessible via the Chiyoda line. No matter how many times you go back and forth on it, you will not somehow miraculously be able to get out.
And that's why Garth was miraculously later than Jen today.
Yes, because going back and forth between Meiji Jingumai and Yoyogi Uehara, no matter how many times you do that, there will not be a Yoyogi Hachiman in between those two stations.
Yes.
On the Chiyoda line.
So I mean, never. I have never come here by train, not once, so I wouldn't know what that means.
Yeah.
I am a lazy, lazy, lazy person.
You can
person.
Use that station if you're on the Oda Q line. Remember that, all of our faithful listeners.
So if you're coming on Chiyoda, what station do you get off at?
At Yoyogi Koen.
Okay.
And they're good, you know, probably about 15, 20 feet apart, those two stations. So, it's not entirely inconceivable that they could be confused, but they are different train lines through the miraculous engineering of the Japan rail system.
Yeah, well, I missed the freeway exit today. This is a brand new freeway exit, but for some reason the tunnel on the brand new freeway has a serious lack of signs.
Oh, this is the same tunnel that you missed it on
right,
last
so I missed
week?
It going the other way last week when Garth and I were leaving the podcast or something.
Wow.
I don't know what we were... maybe we were just driving to my house. I
yes.
can't remember. But so we missed the exit because the sign happens to be right after the exit. And coming back, guess what, today...
In case you wanted to know where you wanted to get off.
Right.
You wanted to get off back there, you guys.
Today, it was the exact same thing. It was right after... It's about probably like... I don't know, 1 meter after the exit. So you could see it, I guess, if you're paying attention.
Wow. All right, well, now that we've illuminated you all to what screw-ups we are, let's talk about how we blow it in Mahjong. Let's see what happened.
Yeah, lots of those
yes,
stories.
I know. Oh, if you thought we were done with those stories, here come the good ones. Let's start with some other people screwing up in Mahjong. I mean, not that the whole thing was a screw-up, but the official European Mahjong Association Reach Tournament was held on some online server. I couldn't quite figure out whether it was on Dragon Kong or whether it was on Mahjong Club, but it was held on an online server, and it only had 8 players, which some of whom walked out after they realized they could not win the tournament anymore, which I think is, like, oh, God, you guys, we got to educate people here. you got to stay in the game. We need everybody to finish the tournament. This is not something that is acceptable in Mahjong tournaments. And it's something, I wonder if there's something that we need to do to change the format of Mahjong tournaments so that it's more like, say, a poker tournament. You know, no, that would never happen in a poker tournament because if you have one chip, you know, chip okay. and a cherry, you're still, there's still...
Double up.
There's still hope. And so nobody would ever consider walking out of a poker tournament while they were, you know, seriously
Well,
bound.
And if they do, they're just blinded out, so it's not quite as big a deal.
But yeah, you do need somebody sitting in the chair, pulling and discarding tiles, and hopefully doing it in such a way that they're not really just helping other people when they don't have a chance to win anymore. But yes, in the inaugural tournament for, I think this is some sort of inaugural tournament for the European Mahjong Association's Reach division. They had 8 players, and the winner was Benedict. Benedict spelled with a 3 instead of an E for the second E. Of Singapore.
Congratulations.
Yes,
wow,
congratulations.
Wow, Singaporeans winning Reach tournaments.
Yes.
Because, you know, Mark Lim, he won our Reach qualifier for the first World Series of Mahjong Reach event on Mahjong Time.
Oh, yes. That's where I know that name from.
And then he also won the ReachMahjong.com tournament that we had on Kong 88, which was Hong Kong rules, but he still won.
Wow.
It's still a ReachMahjong.com tournament.
He seems to know a little bit about Mahjong.
Yeah. He must be really good. Hi, Mark. We love you.
Yeah.
We had a good time bungee jumping with Mark as well.
Oh, yes. I remember that, too.
And
except
Macau.
For me, since I was still trying to compete.
Yeah. That's okay. You can do the jump this year.
But I did notice on at least Dragon Kong... Oh, yes,
you guys like how Garth... Go ahead and,
yes,
went ahead and skipped
sneak
over.
Around jumping off the buildings thing there. It's not one of my fortes. Hopefully I'll still be stuck in the tournament. Speaking of that tournament, there are qualifiers on at least, I believe it was, Dragon Kong for the World Series of Mahjong. So, one thing I thought was interesting about that was I played around on Dragon Kong a little bit today, just the play section, and it would seem, at least in the you know, practice thing, that it allows Yakunashi Agari.
For reach. Wow, we gotta check that out.
Seems like a strange thing. I'm not really such a big fan of the Yakunashi.
So Yakunashi is what?
Oh yes, Yakunashi would mean allowing a hand to win without a hand point, not even pinfu or piece, not even piece or all simples or anything like that. Just you know, 3-3-3-3 and 2 in your hand. Any combination of runs, triples, and pairs is a winning hand on that site, apparently, which seems a little strange.
Yeah, that is strange.
One other disappointing thing to hear about Mahjong. I read on MahjongNews.com that it does not prevent dementia like people had been thinking for a while. That's a big push for Mahjong lately in Japan, that it helps prevent older people from early onset dementia or Alzheimer's.
Wow, you would see some of the old timers in our league though and think that it does, because they're pretty sharp.
Yeah, although from my point of view, I was actually going to say because from my point of view, Mahjong causes dementia. Have you ever seen the way we are? I mean, we are sick with Mahjong the way we are. So I thought, you know, that's a lot of wasted money on that stuff. I could have just told you right from the start. Look at me. So yes, Mahjong may or may not cause or prevent dementia.
Very conclusive.
Yes. Way to lay down the law there.
We should probably, this is an idea I took from Two Jacks in the Hole, another podcast I listen to a lot. And by the way, I called in today, so if you wanted to download that on iTunes, they would appreciate it a lot. But they have a whole section on like wasted studies.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's tons of them. I mean, this is the first one we heard from Mahjong, but there's tons of studies.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you could pay me to do that study, and I could give you a great result.
I wonder if they've heard of AIR, the Annals of Improbable Research, where it's a whole journal devoted to that sort of thing.
Oh, wow. Yeah, probably.
They do have some pretty awesome entries.
So there. I think that we should start marketing ourselves as Mahjong researchists.
We are, pretty much.
Yeah, so...
even as we speak.
Exactly, so we should market ourselves as that and start doing studies like Mahjong encourages university students to stay up at odd hours.
Oh, yes, it probably encourages more pizza consumption, too.
Yes, and and Yoshinoya.
All right, is everybody getting that out there? We need grant money to conduct these studies. So send it in. We'll get right on it. Let's see. The other big event for this weekend, or at least moderately big event for this weekend, was the pro qualifier for Masters.
Yeah.
You participated in that.
Kind of.
Only a little bit you did this time?
Yeah, only a little bit.
What happened for you at the Masters qualifier?
First game, it was okay. I think I was like third or something. They changed the placing bonus, the UMA, this year.
That is big news, yes.
Yeah, it used to be 30 for first place and 10 for second place, which I liked, but now it's 15 for first place and 5 for second place. So now it's actually not very different from the A rules.
Right, that's very
similar. It's really,
really
small for the Ippatsu
Uraari. The placing bonus is not as big a deal at all.
Right, so yeah, it was really tough. Because I actually took first place in my last two games. But in my second game, I went ahead and took a huge last place because the first dealer kept winning and winning. So I decided I would show him. I would show him by making some
a little more
bad reaches and, yeah, helping his cause. He certainly learned his lesson.
I bet he won't be doing that again. Yeah. Hopefully he won't be doing that when he meets me.
Well, the thing was, like, he was really quiet.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like as a pro, when you win a hand, you should be very clear with the score. And if you make, people make mistakes, it's not a huge deal. I mean,
he was quiet when he was announcing the score for his hands.
Right, so I could not hear his scoring. I could see the score, and I could get it, but if I want to, like, kind of check what he's saying, it's easier if they tell you the score and then you check it after, right?
Right.
Which is why everybody says their own score in the pro tournaments, but I couldn't hear him, and so... Huh. I told him that,
I
was hoping it would kind of bring his game down a little bit. Like, I can't hear you. Can you speak a little louder? But apparently,
it only emboldened him.
No effect whatsoever.
Oops.
So my mental game needs work as well.
So all right. So you had a big minus in the second game, and then you had a third place in the first game. You said,
yeah.
And you won the last two games, but because of the fact that the bonus is so small now,
right.
Yeah, and so that's, I understand the fact that you don't want to make the placing bonus basically the entire tournament. But then, on the other hand, that does kind of bring the rules basically back to the same style as, nearly the same style as the A rules.
Right? I'm okay with using the placing bonus as a whole tournament. I mean, one thing I was talking to my friend in A2 about a little while ago was that, especially for the Mahjong tournaments in Japan, the first place prize is so much bigger than the second place prize. So if you don't get first, even if you're at the final table, if you don't get first place, it's really not very much incentive, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, you get a little bit, but, and he was saying, well, because, the point of Mahjong is to get first place at your table, whatever table you're at, you're supposed to be aiming for first place. You're not supposed to be aiming for second. And so I think that, the new placing bonus really doesn't encourage going for first place every time. It just encourages getting a positive score, which is what the A rules are. I mean, when you're in pro league and stuff, your main goal is usually to get a positive score. It's not necessarily to get first, and unless you have certain requirements to move up or something.
Well, positive, of course, is going to have to be at least second place. So you can. It makes aiming for second place a viable winning strategy.
Well, yeah, in the A rules, actually, you can even get third place if you're above 30,000 points.
Right,
you're going to have a positive score.
So in these rules, it encourages still just aiming for second place rather than any positive, even third place.
Right. So that was I don't know. I like it with the bigger one. And I was talking to Shin Kamimura, and he said that he would like it if it was 10-20. He thought 10-30 was too big, which I don't agree with. I like the 10-30. I wish that they would keep it like that because I like the big for that kind of tournament with those rules. I mean, there's no red fives.
Right.
With those rules, when you have the inflation already, I like the placing bonus to be bigger because it matches the inflation.
Right.
If it's small, I feel like it doesn't match the scores.
Uh-huh.
Especially in the pro games, most people are getting big hands. Most of the hands are in B rules are bigger than Mangan. They're 8,000 or bigger.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I've noticed that actually in A rules too. Most of the pro games, they have a lot of big scoring hands, even in A rules.
Really? I've never noticed that in D1.
I've noticed it a lot in my tables in D1 lately.
Really?
Actually, yeah. Huh. I was kind of surprised lately that it's like that, but
that's really interesting. My impression of D1 players, it might perhaps be because I generally tend to be on the fourth floor, which is the lower reaches of the D1 league. But I have been fairly impressed with how low the scoring hands are for most of the tables that I play on. That's interesting.
I had an interesting ruling at my table, too. That was kind of a good story.
Oh, yes. Let's go over that ruling. That was an interesting story, too.
So, it was the last game.
Uh-huh.
Or no, the third game, sorry. It was the third game. And I was in first place by about 1,000 points.
Right. It was a very small margin
between
you and the second place player.
Right. So, basically, if the second place player or I won a hand, we would win the game.
Right.
So obviously, I was trying to win.
Right.
I was one away, and there were two tiles left to draw.
So also at this point, you have to be thinking about the fact that if he finishes ready and you don't finish ready, then
he'll win.
Right, he'll jump ahead of you.
So I was one away, and I had two pairs that I could pawn.
Right.
That weren't out yet.
Uh-huh.
Those tiles weren't out yet. So I was, you know, obviously really hoping that one of those two tiles would come out the last two, because he had already pawned or chowed like three times.
Right, so he's probably ready at this point, you're thinking.
Or maybe twice. He did it twice. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Then all of a sudden he opens his hand with two tiles left, and the other two players put their hands down like they thought the hand was over. And I'm like, wait a second, there's two tiles left.
Uh-huh.
There were 16 tiles left in the king's tiles, and the remaining
and
should
why
be 14.
Was it unclear that there were
Right, so they made this mistake because, well, actually first I said that.
Uh-huh.
And everyone's like, oh, what should we do? What should we do?
Uh-huh.
So they called over the tournament, or one of the tournament helpers.
Uh-huh.
he came over, and he said, oh, look, the Dora's in the wrong place. The Dora indicator was actually one over.
So they had flipped the wrong tile to indicate the Dora.
And it's this player, the second place player, that had flipped the Dora originally.
Huh. And you had actually managed to play the entire hand.
Without anybody noticing that. Right.
That is incredible.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we're, you know, really concentrating on it. He's obviously just trying to win the hand. I'm just trying to win the hand.
Uh-huh.
So we're not looking at the final tiles very often. But I'm always very aware of what the last tile is, where the last tile is. So I would just, like, count how many tiles are left and look at, you know, that's the last tile, and I just didn't really look at the Dora very much.
Interesting.
So...
Excuse me.
So then the helper says, well, this is just too rare of a case, so let me go get the tournament director. And so he called the tournament director, and it took him a couple seconds to come over. So while we were waiting, the helper said, okay, well, the Dora's in the wrong place, so since the time had finished, the time limit was up, he said, so the only thing to decide now is if we're going to end the hand here as a draw, so whoever's ready gets the points, and whoever's not ready gets the points.
Right.
Pays the points, right? Or if it's going to be a foul, a chombo.
Yeah. I can't imagine how the option to end the hand there with two tiles left to go in the hand is a viable option. That
exactly,
seems...
which was my argument. I said, how can you even consider that?
So that at that point, anybody who was in first place would from then on, would be, you know, on the first or second draw of the game, it was just like, oh, okay, I'm Tenpai. And then, I thought we were at the end of the hand. And then, oh, okay, I guess we just have to end the hand here, and whoever is Tenpai or not, then, you know, I mean, that would be a total viable strategy.
Right. So he said, so I just waited for the tournament director. I didn't say anything. Waited for the tournament director to come over.
Uh-huh.
We explained the situation. And I said, you know, I was the only one who didn't do anything with my hand. Obviously, if you put your hand down, it's not going to be a chombo because you're not showing it. There's no rule against putting your hand down ever during the hand. It's not considered good manners, but there's no rule against it.
Right. But showing your hand is basically akin to showing that you either have a winning hand or at the end of the hand that you have a...
Right.
If it's not at the end of the hand, then you're claiming you've won the hand.
Right. So generally, when you do that... even if you make a mistake on the last tile, you forget that there's two more tiles left or one more tile left, it's generally considered a foul, a chombo. I've seen that. I mean, it's been in, like, manga. That's a normal ruling. So, actually, for me, obviously, the only two rulings that I would want to accept would be either he would have a foul, and the hand would end there with me in first place. Or we had finished the last two tiles, like we should.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I might have a chance to tempi. And I might not win the hand, but it would just play out the way it was supposed to.
Right.
But that wasn't, that didn't seem like they considered it an option, that, like, to finish the hand. For some reason, he considered, the helper said that it would be, it might be okay to end the hand there in a draw, but he didn't even consider finishing the hand with the last two tiles.
Wow, that is really strange.
Right, and so he said, well, we might end it in a draw here because the Dora was in the wrong place. And I said, what does that have to do with anything? Like, just yeah. because the Dora is, and first of all, he, the one who is trying to get first place, the one who's ready, is the one who turned over the wrong Dora.
Yeah.
And generally that's not a problem because you just move it over. If everybody's been using that tile for the Dora, it's right. just a general understanding that you can just move it one over and just right. keep using it as the Dora. I mean, you don't use those tiles anyway, so it's not a big deal if you did it from the beginning of the hand.
Right.
So, you know, that's fine. That's, the Dora didn't really have anything to do with it, except for that was what caused the other three players to make a mistake with the last tile.
Huh.
So in the end, the tournament director decided that it would be a foul, and then I ended up taking first place, and that player got a minus 20 penalty on his total score.
So, as a foul, did that mean that the hand ended there?
Yeah.
Well, that seems also very unfair, because what if, by contrast, you had actually been 100, like, 1,000 points behind him?
Yeah.
That 20-point foul, that 20-point penalty comes after
right.
the final calculations for the game.
Right.
You'd have been totally screwed.
Yeah.
I would have thought, like, the ruling should be, because normally, normally a foul, the hand is it's considered a non-event.
Right.
And you end up playing the hand over.
Yeah.
So if the hand happened to have, just because the hand ended after the time, after time was called, it seems to me like you should be able to play that, that you should have had to play that hand again.
Right. But that's not the case.
Regardless of the fact that it's in a tournament.
Since the time ended, then they said it would end there either way.
That seems like a really lame ruling.
Yeah.
And it seems like a ruling made out of, you know, made for expediency's sake.
Yeah.
Rather than for serving the rules' sake.
Right. Yeah. Huh. So that was an interesting situation. It's, I don't know, it got, kind of got me thinking, too. There's a lot of tournaments outside of Japan right now. And obviously, as far as Reach goes, the Japanese pro circuit has the most experience with these kind of rulings and special situations and stuff like that. And there's a lot of new like clubs coming, like the USPML is
right.
coming. EMA is doing the Reach. You know, it's something you have to think about. Yeah,
these events, these kind of things are going to come up as unusual as it seems when it happens. It happened right there.
Right. So you have.
Seems like them are going to happen again. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. We're interrupting each other. So.
Yeah.
You have to really, if you're going to run a tournament, you have to have one ruling that you use consistently for these types of situations. So.
Right.
Yeah.
You have to be prepared. Yes, speaking of being prepared, I forgot, almost forgot, we had one other gigantic event this weekend, the fifth ReachMahjong.com Cup, which I've gotten very good at pronouncing correctly instead of just ReachMahjong.cup.
Way to put all the important things at the end.
Yeah.
I can't believe you would think JPML's Masters Tournament was more important than the fifth ReachMahjong.com Cup.
Funk. But yes, speaking of running a tournament, I ended up running the Reach Mahjong Dog Cup fifth event.
You said it again. I love it.
I did again. but I have to say, it is a new kind of stress. You know, I mean, it's not like running a tournament is the basic idea of running a tournament is it's not very difficult. But it's those little things that come up that
right.
you know, somebody asks you a question and right off the bat you're just what happens here? And we did actually have a foul in one hand last tournament. Speaking of that foul, that girl did actually manage to make it to the final table.
Yeah, she did. She did great. That was her second tournament ever.
Yeah. And
in her second or third month of playing live Mahjong.
Yeah, really. She's been playing Fight Club until about one or two months ago, and then she just decided, hey, I want to start playing real Mahjong, and she's been heading out to Mahjong parlors, and she's come to our last two tournaments. And she's already on her first final table.
Yeah.
Way to go, Yasumi.
She's actually, I think she's going to start helping the site and stuff a little bit. She's really, really...
Really big enthusiast.
Yeah, very active and very, yeah, very enthusiastic.
Yes.
You're so good with words.
and may even have a little sense for Mahjong. Although, you can't, when you've cheed three times and you have 5, 6, 6, 7 of characters. You cannot win with the 7 of characters.
Right.
Try to remember that, especially you, 6. Yasumi.
We also had a huge hand on my table.
Oh,
I ended
yes.
up, I actually played in the ReachMahjong.com Cup this time. Just a word out to you guys, if you come, you might have a chance to play with Garth or I or Konno. Well, probably not Konno, actually, because if he wins, he can't play in the Reach event in the World Series since
anyway,
he's a tournament
yeah.
director. But you or I could.
Right.
So we are free to buy into the satellite when we need more people. So I went ahead and played this weekend. And at my second table, I was with the top pro of Japan Pro Mahjong Association. And his friend was next to him at that table. And
Nakashima, I think his name was.
There were two friends.
Yes, Nakashima was the second friend.
Okay.
Are we not allowed to say anything?
Yeah, you can say that.
Oh, okay. Yes, the top player, Ogura.
Yes.
Brought two of his friends, Nakashima and Kamata.
Yes. And so, I guess Nakashima.
Yes.
Nakajima. In Japan now.
They say that name both ways. I've definitely heard that name
pronounced
both ways.
Yeah, they do, but I think most of the people in Japan changed to Nakajima.
Huh.
And some of the people who are outside of Japan left before it changed.
Oh.
Maybe not everybody, though. I'm not an expert in Japanese names. Anyway, so we drew our hand. You know, we did the deal. And he's the dealer. And he goes, sumo. He goes, is this sumo? And we can't see his hand. We're sort of like, what?
Yeah.
And he opens his hand. And he goes, yeah.
I've
he
always
had a
wondered,
winning hand.
I've always wondered what to say there, too, myself. For Tenho, he had the instant winning hand as dealer.
Yeah.
Do you say tsumo?
Yep. Apparently.
I guess, because it doesn't feel like tsumo.
So then he opens his hand, and the first thing he says is, there's no way to make this bigger, right? He's like, I was thinking maybe I should reach. And he's serious. This is his third month playing Mahjong as well, so he's completely
Holy
serious.
Holy cow.
No, when you get a winning hand on the deal, you just sumo.
Wow, thank God he knew about men's and sumo also. Rather than Yasumi, that was our interesting story from last month's tournament that Yasumi did not know that men's and sumo, that an entirely self-drawn hand, was a winning hand. So apparently he thought that was a winning hand only because he drew it right off the bat. Or only because it was all drawn himself?
I'm not sure what he thought, but we're like, well, this is a limit hand. That's the biggest hand you could get. It was 48,000, because he's a dealer.
Because he's the dealer, yeah.
So 16,000 from each player, but
and
he's like,
is...
there's nothing I can do here to change it, right? Because we often talk about tegawari, which means
right.
If your hand is ready
uh-huh.
and you have a hand point, you might want to wait to make it a little bit bigger. Like, if you have all runs, like the piece hand, and you have 1-9 in there, and all the rest are inside tiles.
Uh-huh.
You might want to wait to draw that 6 before you reach, because it makes it a little bit bigger. So that's what he was thinking. Is there something here I could do to make this bigger?
I have to say, that is the first time I have ever seen Tenho, the instant win.
Really? Well, that was... Okay, that was a top pro from the Pro Mahjong Association.
Uh-huh.
Also, another pro from JPML, Muro Fushi-san.
Was there, yes.
And myself. So uh-huh. we have 3 pros on the table. All have been pros for at least 4 or 5 years,
uh-huh.
and them longer, obviously.
Uh-huh.
And it was the first time any of us had been at a table when that hand was won.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is impressive.
I have seen it once before. I saw Hisato Sasaki draw it during one of our study sessions.
How amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. So congratulations to Nakajima, perhaps Nakajima. for winning the high hand bonus
right.
on
so
for
he got
for
an exclusive ReachMahjong.com strap.
Congratulations, and also congratulations to his buddy Kamata, whose first name do you remember his first name? Kamata. He is forever heretofore known as Kamata. He is the winner of the 5th ReachMahjong.com Cup. And he will be going with us all to Macau in August to play in the World Series of Mahjong Reach event.
Yes. We have 2 winners so far. The Tanaka Pro.
And Kamata.
Right.
Congratulations to those guys. All right, that is the world of Mahjong for the last week, and...
You can qualify even if you're not in Japan.
Oh.
For the World Series of Mahjong Reach event.
That's right. There will be qualifiers on various... on at least one.
Right. So we just announced, or about to announce, our...
Partnership?
New affiliate program with Mahjong Club.
Uh-huh.
Gemma and I will be playing on Mahjong Club as pros once a week from
that
now on.
Sounds pretty exciting.
Yep. And so you can come play with us. Whoever wins the most from us wins actually a $200 bonus at the end of the period.
Wow.
Yeah, you can check the details on mahjongclub.com. And also, they will be having a qualifier for the Reach event sometime in May. So look for that.
Sounds exciting.
And if that goes well, we will have more qualifiers after that.
All right. So yes, there are many ways to get to the World Series of Mahjong.
Yes.
Not even if you are not actually in Japan. All right, speaking of the Japan Professional Mahjong League, as we were earlier, their Masters Tournament, one reader sent some email to us asking about the structure of JPML. We started talking about it a couple weeks ago. We basically just mentioned the fact that in Tokyo, which is the main branch of the JPML, we have 10 leagues, 10 sort of sub-leagues of the whole Japan Professional Mahjong League.
Wow, you counted. Way to go. I never thought about how many there were.
Well, yes, there's 2A, 2B, 3C, and 3D leagues.
Yes. And the reason why we didn't get more into the subject is because Garth was going on and on about those 10 leagues last time.
Yes. So let's jump over those. And we did also mention that there are local leagues. For example, you play in the Northern Kanto League.
Yes.
And in fact, there are leagues all over Japan. I can't remember all the divisions.
There's one in Kyushu, on Kyushu Island,
uh-huh.
Which Kaori Shimizu had a huge hand in helping build.
Uh-huh.
Also, there's one in Kansai. I think it's the Chubu one.
Uh-huh.
Maybe there's Kansai and Chubu.
I think there's Kansai and Chubu,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, so there's two. And Chubu is somewhere in the middle.
Uh-huh.
There's also Tohoku, which is brand new, I think. And another one that I forgot how to pronounce.
There are at least six or seven, I think.
Also Shizuoka, which is where Sarukawa was going.
Huh.
Even after he moved to Tokyo and was playing in the Pro League, he still went back to Shizuoka for his... regional league.
So there are, yeah, so we have the main branch in Tokyo, and then there are those local leagues, and there are a couple special leagues. For one, the women's league,
right.
Which is called which kind of flower? Come on.
Sakura.
Sakura.
The cherry blossom.
That's basically cherry blossom also? Wow. The women's league, it's translated as cherry blossom, and we also have a special league, which is for players to, it gives players an opportunity to jump up in the main leagues more quickly in Tokyo. So those are the basic leagues.
Also Champions League.
Oh, Champions League. Well, I was going to talk about Champions League as more of a tournament. I'm not sure how to present that.
I think it's a league. It was started kind of as a practice league.
Uh-huh.
So that lower people in the lower leagues, like us, the D and C leagues, can play with people in the A leagues.
Okay,
and
it gives us a chance to match up against those players outside of tournaments.
Right, and it gives more pros a chance at winning a title.
Right.
Since the big tournaments are so hard to win.
Well, so then that counts as a title.
Yeah, but so does the Pro League, actually.
League counts as a title, but Special League does not count as a title.
Right, but the Women's League also counts as a title.
Huh.
So
okay.
Special League is the only one that doesn't count as a title.
All right, I wasn't sure how to categorize everything.
Right.
But we have a bunch of title matches, or tournaments where you can get a title, and the only one, I guess, then that you can't actually get a title from is Special League.
Right.
We have the top of the A League person, they get a title, and then Champions League also wins a title. But we also have then three other tournaments, which are also considered title tournaments. Masters, which we were talking about earlier, which is going on right now.
Right, and the amateurs can play as well.
Right, Masters, these are national tournaments that that allow basically anybody to play. It's not limited to Renmei, it's not limited to Japan Professional Mahjong League, or any other pro league. Amateurs, anybody can play in these tournaments. The Masters tournament and the OE. King, OE. And then there is one more tournament, which is limited to just JPML players, the 10 Steps tournament,
right.
Which is the players in JPML get to join according to their rank.
Right. Also, the Pro Queen tournament is also, it's open to all pros, actually. It's not open to amateurs, but it's open to any pro women player in any league.
In any pro association.
So if they belong to a league, they're qualified to play in it.
Huh, okay, so that's also the Pro Queen. So Pro Queen and the Women's League are separate separate tournaments.
Yes.
Or separate events.
Pro Queen, they had Pro Queen first.
I see.
There weren't enough women for a whole league,
uh-huh.
I think, at the time. So they just started the Women's League, I think, our second year.
Uh-huh.
That we were in, so maybe 2007. And Pro Queen was going on long before that. So it's just one tournament. And the Women's League is a full year-long league.
Okay, so yeah, JPML has quite a few different events and subdivisions and things going on. And, by the way, they have also Ron 2.
Yes.
Ron, which is their online mahjong site. The site that's associated exclusively with Japan Professional Mahjong League.
Right, and we play on that. On reachmahjong.com once a week.
Yes.
Every Sunday.
Someday, one of us, two of us, may even get pro IDs. Who knows? those were most of the details that I had come up with regarding JPML structure. Were there other things that that I didn't cover?
We talked about how you become a pro, right?
Oh, I think we did. Yeah, I mean, the pro test. Yeah.
Right. So the players that have taken the pro test but are still in their study phase before actually joining the pro league, they actually qualify to play in Champions League.
Oh, yes. I remember noticing that.
That's kind of new.
Yes. A couple players that I remember seeing at Champions League, and then I said, oh, how are you doing in normal league? And they said, what? I'm not even in normal league. Yes. So that's something they added last year, then?
I think so. Huh. They changed the system to join. My phone is taking pictures by itself.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Way to go, phone.
I know, it's pretty aggressive.
Are you going to be playing in Champions League this season?
Yes, I'm going to play in Champions League.
I missed Champions League last week.
Yeah, I did as well. I'm going to start in May, I believe. Also, I have something I really want to say.
Yes?
It's just bubbling up inside of me. I don't know how much longer I can vamp before I just give up and not remember. Also, JPML offers a lot of training to the pros.
Oh, yes. So the training sessions, like after you take the test, but before you can be...
No, that's not what I'm talking about. The people who are already pros, they actually have two kind of courses that you can take.
Uh-huh.
So one of them is basically how to teach mahjong.
Really?
They have like a mahjong teacher's course.
Oh, I did not even know about that.
So, like, you know, everybody in the league obviously can play mahjong and they can teach, mm-hmm. but obviously there's certain things that help you teach people.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a course to help people with that. Because one of the things that a lot of mahjong pros do is they teach study sessions to amateurs. So they teach them how to play mahjong, or they teach them how to get better at mahjong, and people pay to come to these courses.
Right.
So you can get that certification.
Huh.
Another one is hand histories. They have a hand history course. Because now, well, we take hand histories at the reachmahjong.com cups, but we're always writing on paper.
Right.
And now the big thing is doing it on the computer. So I have four computers set up. They're all connected to each other.
Uh-huh.
So you can see in real time everybody's hand.
Wow.
And they put it in the computer and then, whoop, just print it out.
Wow.
Yeah. Nice. And so they have a course to learn how to do that correctly. And then that ends up being a job for some people. They go to the big tournaments and take the hand histories, and so they get paid a certain amount for the day. And if you have that certification, you get paid more than if you don't.
Wow.
Even
I
though
did
it's
not know about
easier
these.
On the computer.
Yeah.
You get paid more for it because you need certification.
Huh.
Yep.
Very interesting. Might have to go and get certified. Maybe then I would actually know how to do it.
So I think you have to pay $10 for each class, but that's not very much. And then you get the certification, and then they can call you up for those courses. And I believe at the hand history one, you also have to actually practice taking it by hand, because when the computer goes down,
then you do actually have to do it by hand.
Yeah,
right?
And I've seen that happen. When they were first getting started, they pretty much had to do that every hand. We get the computers back up again, and a couple minutes later, oops.
Whoops. All right, so that gives you an idea of what the JPML structure is like, and I know you know, some other fledgling organizations might be thinking about how to create their own structure. So hopefully that gives you some ideas about what you'd like to do in your own leagues or associations.
Yeah, I think one of the most important things is to create study sessions, what we call kenshukai, because you really need a forum where you can talk with other players, and where you can stop the game when you need to, and just discuss things. I mean, that's just really important.
Yeah, it's real honest-to-goodness practice sessions where people can get together and discuss things, rather than just playing all the time. It's, you know, anybody playing a sport wouldn't just go and play the sport all the time. You got to practice a little bit to get better at it.
Right, and it's, if you're the one who's trying to create the association or something, it's not just for getting better at Mahjong, it's also for seeing all these situations and deciding the rules amongst each other and things like that.
Okay, that's that wraps up our talk about the JPML structure, and that just about wraps up the discussion for this week. Let's see what's coming up. We have the Masters, the main tournament of Masters this weekend. I get to join that in the best 56, based on my performance last year.
Oh, good for you!
Yes, isn't that good for me? But I don't know. Looking at the people that made it to the finals of last year's tournament, nobody who made it to the finals of the year before made it to the final table, so I don't think it bodes very well for me.
Is this the way you, like, say the opposite so you don't jinx it, and then you jinx it the opposite way?
Yes, very, very clever trick of mine. Yes, I am very excited to be jumping in at the final 56, but then I'm really afraid that maybe that's where I will stop anyway, so... Hopefully I'll be able to improve my standing a little bit.
Well, I wish you good luck, even though it's going to really piss me off if you win. And I'll just tell you beforehand that I'm going to be at a barbecue on the day of the finals, so with producer Troy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yep. So...
Well, maybe I'll get to go anyway.
Right. So if you go to the final table, I will be cheering you on from afar with an amaretto in my hand.
Oh. Maybe I'll have to have an amaretto by my side, just to be there in spirit.
I'm going to go buy a flask. Do you need one?
All right. As always, we love to hear from you, your feedback or things that you want to hear about. My address is GarthE, GARTHE, at ReachMahjong.com. And what's your address?
Jen, JENN, at ReachMahjong.com.
Thank you again for listening, and we will see you next week.
See ya.
本気でリーチに一発ロー南マージャンやりましょう目指すはもちろん役満賞モニーは絶対かけましょう本気リーチに一発ローあがればキブンはもう最高場所はかなり錆びれたジャズマージャンワイドクラブ本気ロッあーお兄さんまたそれロンヤは